I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
A Rayo Original Podcast.
It's not just our periods. It's not just impacting our women's health. It's impacting every single thing we do. When you're on the pill, you have a fake bleed. You're not actually having a period. It's just like a withdrawal thing. So you don't actually know the state of your body.
I went to bed as one person and I truly felt I woke up as another, which is really hard. It's hard to know that as a woman, you go through this 1 week a month, that's a quarter of your life.
So estrogen has so many amazing benefits. It influences things like your skin health, collagen production, motivation, energy, muscle building potential, your gut, like everything. We think that maybe there's some kind of evolutionary advantage going on here. There's more than just the period. Male doctors made up like years and years ago about like how there's this illness that originates from a woman's womb and it makes her crazy and blah, blah, blah.
Really?
It's where the word like hystericals come from.
Hello and welcome back to Rise with Roxy. From period pain to perimenopause, our hormones are quietly running the show. And yet so many of us are left in the dark about what's really going on. So today we're diving into the science of women's health with Dr. Hazel Wallace, aka the food medic. She's a former NHS doctor, registered nutritionist, personal trainer, and best-selling author of Not Just a Period. Hazel is on a mission to help women understand their bodies, optimize their cycles, and take control of their health. So if you've ever wondered why you feel off at certain times of the month or how your workouts and nutrition should actually change with your cycle, this episode is for you. And if you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow, rate, subscribe. It really does help. Okay, so let's rise with Hazel. Hazel, thank you so much for being a guest on Rise with Roxy. I've wanted to have you on for so long and we've got so much good stuff to talk about today.
I know, I'm really excited to be on.
So before we get into all the science, and I want to talk today about cycles, perimenopause, there's so much I want to discuss. But what is just one myth about women's health that you would like to clear up?
That is such a big question. I think when it comes to like anything related to women's health, I think there's this common narrative that we just have to put up with it. It's just part and parcel of being a woman. So when we think about like painful periods, when we think about like menopausal symptoms, there's this narrative that we just have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're going to establish in this conversation, what I write about in my books, is there's so much support that we can do. There's so many things we can do in our lifestyle, or whether that's medical support, that can help you get through these transitions in a much easier way. Mm-hmm. So I guess my biggest message is like, you don't have to put up with it.
I think that is so helpful to hear. And I, for one, I'm like, great, please give me all the tips, especially when it comes to PMS. So I did want to talk through the menstrual cycle in full detail, go on a deep dive, because I don't think many of us, men and women, I don't think have enough awareness around what is happening. And I think it's really, the more information we have about our bodies, the better that we are going to be able to live and the more we're going to be able to thrive within our lives. So let's start with phase one, which is the menstrual phase, which is when you actually have your period.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is happening hormonally during this time?
So first of all, I love that you're asking these questions, because I feel like we don't ever bring it back to basics. And it's so important to understand, first of all, what's happening. So in the first like 1 to 5 days, for some women, it can be up to 7 days, but we'll say 1 to 5 days. During that bleeding phase, your hormones, estrogen and progesterone, are really low, and they are low. So that's what causes your womb lining to shed. And during that time, you might find you feel really flat, like low in energy, lethargic. That's because your estrogen is quite low, and that usually gives us our energy and our motivation. during that time as well, there's like a lot of inflammation in the body. So when our womb lining is shedding, it releases things called like prostaglandins, and they help that cramping happen, which helps shed the womb lining. And that is a necessary part of the process. It causes pain, unfortunately, but we can help support that inflammation through things like, you know, gentle exercise, our diet, looking at anti-inflammatory foods as well.
When you have inflammation in this part of the cycle, is the inflammation localized to your kind of womb, or is it kind of everywhere?
It can just be localized to your womb, but it can be everywhere. You know, some women get really severe symptoms. So in the case of endometriosis, you can get like widespread inflammation. So you can get like bloating. The thing is, the prostaglandins that I just mentioned, and they're like hormone compounds, they help the body shed the womb lining, but they also impact nearby organs. So you might find that your gut's affected. And so women find that they get bloating, they even get like, you know, they're running to the bathroom a bit more often. So there's other things that are impacted, not just what's happening inside your womb. I think for a lot of women, you find that premenstrually, the week before your period or the 2 weeks before your period, you can feel like things, you have more, I guess, psychological symptoms. So you might find you feel more irritable, you might feel more tearful, you might find like you're unable to concentrate as much at work. And then you also have the physical side of PMS. So you could have breast tenderness, bloating, cramping, poor sleep, all of those things. And so for a lot of women, although having their period isn't exactly pleasant, it can bring a moment of, ah, like all of that makes sense. Like that's why I felt that way.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm always so relieved when I get my period, because I'm like, and we're over the PMS.
Yeah.
Because the PMS is so bad, and we'll go into that in a second. But day one of my cycle, I'm like, oh, thank God we're through that for another 3 weeks until we go through it again.
That's it.
Why might women feel maybe more introspective or intuitive during this time?
Well, I guess during that time, you know, similar to what we've just mentioned, you've just come through a period where progesterone's quite high and your hormones are dropping. And so this is almost like what a lot of people do call it, like, you know, the start of a new season or something, where you feel like you want to, maybe you want to be more cozy, you want to be more introspective, you want to reflect more. You know, they call it someone's winter. Again, it's very different for every woman. Some women have a really terrible time during their period. Some women find actually it's much better than the week before. And so that's a good time for them to double down, do work, whatever they want to do. So it's really hard to say you're definitely going to feel this way versus what, you know, every two women are very different.
Mm. Do you find that some women tend to have really tough periods, but then easier a time with their week before when they have PMS, and then sometimes the other way around? Or can some people have both really tough PMS and really tough periods?
Unfortunately, some people can have both. And then you kind of you run into the issue where you basically have like 2 weeks of your whole month where you just feel so rubbish. And, you know, if you have anything like endometriosis or PMS or PMDD, which is like a severe form of PMS, that can really impact things like your work, your ability to exercise, your ability to choose healthy foods, your relationships. Like, I think this is one of the most important messages that like I try to get through in the book, is it's not just our periods. It's not just impacting our women's health. It's impacting every single thing we do. Mm. And so I think it's so important that these conversations are being had.
Absolutely. Okay, so knowing that it can be different for everyone, and you mentioned sort of gentle walking, what else can somebody be doing during this phase of their cycle to support them?
Yeah, so during your period, it's actually absolutely fine to exercise. I know when I was in school, like everyone used it as an excuse not to exercise, but it's actually, there's good evidence to say that because it increases blood flow to the pelvis and exercise is anti-inflammatory, doing some form, like if you don't feel like you want to do anything intense, like maybe a yoga session, a gentle Pilates session, whatever feels good for you, choosing foods that what we would put into the category of like anti-inflammatory, so typical Mediterranean style foods like your colorful fruits and veg, your omega-3s from oily fish, flaxseed, chia seed, nuts and seeds, olive oil, all of those really good foods that will help dial down the inflammation. It's not going to stop the cramping completely, but it should help. And things like sleeping, resting as much as you need to is also important. So like thinking about the other pillars outside of exercise and nutrition. And then if you have really severe symptoms and you get like really bad cramping, there are some supplement trials that show like promising results in like the use of omega-3 capsules, for example. I'm a bit more of a food first approach. So I'd say like try getting your oily fish first. If you're struggling, then maybe think about things like omega-3.
Any foods we should avoid that might make it worse?
I would avoid like things like caffeine, anything with like sugar-free foods. So those are sugar-free foods tend to produce a lot of gas. And during that time, women tend to lean more towards like looser stools. And so if you're having sugar-free foods, if you're having alcohol, fatty foods, caffeine, you're just going to make matters worse. Mm-hmm. It just kind of ramps up symptoms. So trying to avoid those as much as possible.
So let's go into phase two, which is the follicular phase. Yeah. What is this phase and what does it do to us?
So now we're moving into the second half of the follicular phase. And during this time, estrogen, which was low, starts to rise. And so this is preparing our body for ovulation. Progesterone, the other hormone, remains low. And that's a good thing. So estrogen has so many amazing benefits. Like we talk about it as if it's just a sex hormone, but it influences things like your skin health, collagen production, motivation, energy, muscle building potential, your gut, like everything. So during this time, we talk about women having like an ovulation glow. And that's because that estrogen is increasing pre-ovulation during that time. And so a lot of people will say, you know, during this time is a great time to be in the gym, trying to get some like PBs, doing anything that's high intensity. The research there does seem to suggest that like that is a really good time for muscle building potential and strength gains. The kind of marginal benefits are quite small. So I would say like I try to get women to continue training throughout their cycle. But now might be a good time if you have a race or if you're doing some kind of like heavy lifting in the gym, that's a really good time. Again, like I mentioned, your skin tends to look like even better. So you might find that it's more hydrated. You're not having breakouts during that time. Whereas this phase before, sometimes our skin is a bit more sensitive because of that inflammation. So this is a really good time.
And what days of the cycle is this?
So this would be days like after day five, so around day 7 to 14. So we usually have ovulation on day 14, but it can vary.
And why is it that you think that confidence can often rise here? Do you think it is just because of that effect on your skin, or is it that estrogen is giving you some kind of help?
So we think that maybe there's some kind of evolutionary advantage going on here, because when you think about it, you're entering that like where you're most fertile. And so you're looking for a male partner. And so women tend to use more confidence. And actually, there's some evidence that we choose different clothes around that time. So there was like one study where they found that women chose like sexier clothes during that time.
Wow.
So that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
Also, our body image can change during that time. We think that we look better, even if we aren't really physically changing all that much, versus in the luteal phase, we often think that we look different.
Yeah.
We think that we've gained weight. We think that our face has changed when it hasn't really.
Yeah.
So it's really powerful what our hormones can do to like our mind and our psyche.
Yes. Oh my God. I can absolutely say that that's happened to me many months. And, you know, when I was with Wade, I remember every month I'd say, oh my God, I don't know why I've just put on so much weight. And then he'd be like, give it a week. And then I'd be like, oh my God, no, I have not won. Okay, so that's the follicular phase. And then we go on to ovulation. Now, ovulation is obviously not just about fertility. Mm-hmm. What's happening to the hormones here?
So in order to ovulate, estrogen peaks and another hormone called LH. And during that time, we release an egg. But we also tend to, you might have some symptoms during that time. Not every woman knows if they ovulate, but for some women, you might find some one-sided pain. Sometimes we notice that the cervical mucus is a little bit egg white and stretchy, so that's a good thing to look at. If you have like a whoop or an aura ring, you might notice you get like a little temperature increase after you ovulate. And so the main kind of hormonal change is estrogen then. So that's similar to the follicular phase. So ovulation is really only one day in time. So I tend to kind of blend the late follicular phase and ovulation together in terms of what's happening hormonally. So similar to what we've just mentioned, The only other thing to mention that during that time, sometimes we have found in the research that there's a slight increased risk of injury for women, and that's because the hormones can impact our joint laxity. So we see that in female footballers, for example. And that's a really interesting area of research because we're starting to really be able to cater to female athletes, to women in general, in terms of what they need, because most of the research we have is based on male bodies.
Yeah. Absolutely. And does libido shift in this time?
So libido can increase, and that's because, again, we're ovulating and we feel good, we feel confident. Our bodies know that right now is the time for us, prime baby making time. Mm-hmm. Whereas we find the opposite changes once we enter the luteal phase. So I always say, like, again, as we mentioned earlier, not all women experience this, but most women do.
And do we actually change in some ways that make us more attractive to a potential mate? Like, from an evolutionary perspective, has that happened?
Yeah, there's been mixed research on this where they've said that partners have found their female partners more attractive during that time, but it's not been strong enough. So I think the strongest thing is our perception of ourselves versus how other people perceive us, if that makes sense.
Which I suppose, you know, actually in turn becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if we believe we are more attractive, we will attract more people to us.
That's
because
it.
We become more magnetic.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we go into the luteal phase. This is, I suppose, the phase where you have PMS.
Yeah.
And I am so kind of intrigued about this and want to really learn more because in my own life, you know, I have been so aware of my PMS and I've been tracking my cycle for years and years now. And it has really helped me to track it because I know that from day 21 of my cycle, you know, I'll try not to book too many things on camera because I am convinced that I look worse and my face is puffy. And I'm also much more self-conscious because I feel like my mental resilience is lower. I'm more irritable. I'm probably a bit grumpier. I really do struggle with this. And I have found that it's been much better as of late. I've done different things and we'll talk about them that have helped. But for example, this month was awful. I went to bed as one person and I truly felt I woke up as another, which is really hard. It's hard to know that as a woman, you go through this 1 week a month, that's a quarter of your life, which is insane. What is actually happening to us on a hormonal level?
Yeah, so luteal phase is that like last 2 weeks before your next period. And estrogen, which rose during ovulation, comes back down and then it rises with progesterone. Mm-hmm. So progesterone's been quite quiet for the first half of the cycle. And it's not a bad hormone, but it does bring with it like a lot of the things that we think are negative or that we associate with the menstrual cycle. And so that might be things like breast tenderness, changes to our sleep. So we find that sleep quality and quantity is disrupted during that time. Also skin changes. So we're producing more sebum, our skin's more oily. And so when everyone says, oh, like I'm getting a spot, so I must be getting my period, like that's that is why that's happening. But also you mentioned PMS, and we know that 90% of women experience some premenstrual symptom, but then a smaller portion, 20 to 40%, experience PMS, which is premenstrual syndrome. It's the actual syndrome. And we diagnose that if it's like impacting your day-to-day life. So if you're finding that like you're unable to go to work, or, you know, it was impacting your ability to exercise and things, so it's impacting your quality of life. And then a smaller percentage get something called PMDD, and about 3 to 8% of women get this. And that's like a severe form of PMS, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And it's actually a diagnostic mental health disorder. So it's in the manual that we use to diagnose mental health disorders because it's such a, it impacts your mood so much. And the difference between that and depression or anxiety is that it comes before your period and then it should disappear or get better as your period starts. And then it happens every single cycle. Whereas like if you had depression or anxiety, that would be it wouldn't be cyclical, it would just be there most days. And so there's a lot more awareness coming out about PMDD. A lot of more celebrities are talking about it, but it can be so debilitating that like people have thoughts of suicide or even try to end their lives, which is really, really sad when we just simply don't know why it's happening. If we took the blood levels of someone who does have PMDD versus someone who doesn't, it seems they have the same level of hormones. But if you have PMS or PMDD, you're more sensitive to that drop. So, you know, research looking into how can we really like help women during that time? We still don't have the answers. A lot of the kind of support is let's blunt those hormones with hormonal contraception, other forms of hormonal methods. But there are things that you can do in your lifestyle.
Like what?
So there's, I guess, looking at the four areas that I really picture when it comes to what can we do in our lifestyle, nutrition, movement, sleep, and stress. Looking at nutrition, I'm a nutritionist, so that's like my favorite part of the puzzle. A really important thing is during that luteal phase, we are less insulin sensitive, which means like when we have carbohydrates, our body doesn't handle them as well as it would later in the cycle. And so you might find that you get more erratic blood sugar levels or you get bigger cravings. The other thing that's really interesting is during the luteal phase, you actually burn more calories at rest. So some studies say that's up to 300 calories. So if you're feeling more hungry, that is why your body's working harder. Right. So one of the things that's really smart during this time is you do not want to skip meals. You want to have regular balanced meals. And so I often say like have your three meals a day. And if you need to have snacks in between, but we want to make sure that those meals are incredibly balanced. So we're going for our high fiber complex carbs and we're pairing them with protein and healthy fats. So when we add protein and healthy fats to a carb, it just helps blunt that blood sugar response and helps sustain that energy. So you feel more energized, you don't feel as irritable, you don't get those big sugar swings. So an example meal might be you do salmon with sweet potato and you've got green veg on the side and you've cooked that in olive oil. That is a perfect balanced meal during that time. You've got your omega-3s, you've got your healthy fats, your protein, your complex carbs and your fiber.
So I suppose that's actually super helpful because what I find is when I've got PMS, I crave chocolate more.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is because we have, well, you're saying that we have more insulin sensitivity. So actually the chocolate, although I'm craving it, is actually going to make me more irritable, probably contribute to those kind of like mood swings because your blood sugar is going up and down. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And like, I'm a big believer in like, if you restrict, you're going to rebound and then you'll want more of that. So maybe you are having your dark chocolate, but you're having some peanut butter on your dark chocolate. So we're having like some fat with that and then we're helping blunt that.
Well, I'm really obsessed at the moment with those, you know, dates.
The dates.
That's a great
snack because dates are full of fiber. Yes, they are like a very high, you know, we're getting a lot of sugar from that. But if we're adding some peanut butter, maybe some dark chocolate, that's perfect.
Oh, great. I'm actually going to make some when I get home. Is this phase good for anything?
That is a really good question. And let me see. Is it good for anything? I would say maybe now is a good time to double down on like rest and recovery. So if you are using the other parts of the month to like double down on big work projects or you're training in the gym, like maybe just using this time to almost like give into the what's happening.
Yeah.
Because I think we're all go, go, go. And so maybe it's just a time where you can allow yourself to actually have a little bit more peace in your life, to say no to a few more things, to implement more boundaries. In terms of what's happening physically, like not really.
Right.
I wish I had the answer to say, yes, something's really good, but unfortunately not.
Because I really, and I mean this without any judgment, only on like, why wouldn't you do this for yourself? But I am baffled, truly baffled by people that don't track their cycles. Like, I cannot understand it because what happens is so many women in my life, whether it's like my sister or my friends, they'll be so upset, crying for no reason, overly emotional, feeling like, and often what happens is when we feel bad and when our mood drops, we try to find a meaning for it.
Yeah.
So suddenly, oh my gosh, is my relationship not great? Oh my God, I hate my job. Oh my God, this person's annoying me. And we find all these things that we think are wrong in our life. And then, you know, you don't want to say that thing because it's all so annoying when people say it. It's like, is your period coming? But is your period coming? And they'll say, oh, I don't know. And then 2 days later, I'll get, you know, oh, God, I got my period. You're right. And this is so common and it happens all the time. But what I think is that if we were to track our cycles, if you can know, this is where I am at in my cycle. This is why I'm suddenly feeling low. This is why this thing feels more like it's irritating more than it normally would. You actually give yourself an opportunity to just check out, not attach meaning to every emotion that you're experiencing. And then I think you can actually ride the wave of it so much better.
Yeah.
I think if you don't know, you are going to make things so much worse for yourself.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, if you are someone who does have a really turbulent luteal phase and you know that, then like having things in place that allow you to have a better time. Like I can remember working with one woman in particular who had pretty severe PMDD and endometriosis as well. So, you know, she'd really, really debilitating, painful, heavy periods. But then the 2 weeks before were also really horrible for her. And little things like if we used her good weeks, which we call them like and then versus her bad weeks, used her good weeks to like meal prep, put things in the freezer. So she always knew that like during her bad weeks, she would just order takeout all the time and then feel even worse. Mm-hmm. We could like plan ahead, prep ahead so that she made those harder weeks a lot easier for herself. Mm-hmm. And booking in like walking dates with her friends during those harder weeks, because she would like really go into herself, be really insular. And so she's like, I'm not going to push myself to go to the gym, but I'm actually going to just get out, meet a friend and go for a walk in the morning. And those little things just make so much of a difference versus just halting and saying, I can't do anything during this time.
Totally. As somebody that is, I sort of have a group of girls on my team, and as women, you know, we're all working together and there are lots of hormones going on. What do you think any person who is leading a team of women could do to support the team members, knowing that there is hormones and we are going through stuff and we are all having our PMS at different times? Yeah.
I think, first of all, having the culture where it's talked about and like it's open and honest, because then if someone is struggling, they feel like it's something that they can talk about. Because if someone had the flu or they had a cold or whatever, and they said, you know, they wouldn't be afraid to tell you, I can't come into work today, or I'm not performing at my best because of this. Mm-hmm. But we don't feel like we can say that when it comes to anything related to our periods or our women's health. Mm-hmm. And I think there's many reasons for that. You know, there's a lot of shame when it comes to talking about menstrual cycles. There's also like this idea that maybe we won't get opportunities if we're speaking up about symptoms that we're having. So we might lose out in the workplace. Other cultures or other countries right now are trying out menstrual leave. I think this is where you essentially, like Spain's one of the countries that have just adopted it, you can take time off during your period. And we don't have that here in the UK. And there's basically quite a big debate as to whether this is going to help or hinder women, because it may then really like create that stigma gap more.
Yeah.
Or it could help women who have really debilitating periods and actually they do need that time off. Mm. I don't really have the answer yet. I think it's really interesting to watch how it unfolds in other countries and see whether it's something that we should adopt here.
Mm. But are there any other supplements that you have found to be good?
When it comes to PMS, so there's a couple of things. Have you come across something called Chasberry? It's usually the supplement that's recommended. There's some good evidence for it. Not everyone can take it if you're on certain medications, but it can help. Then trials looking at calcium and vitamin D. Vitamin D is something that I recommend that like everyone should be topped up on anyway, especially in the UK. We just don't make enough through sunlight in the winter months. But trials looking at calcium and vitamin D seem to help. Again, I would start with looking at your diet if you can before thinking about supplementation. And magnesium is another one which can be helpful. They would be like the four that seem to have the most evidence. There are some others that are like, you know, vitamin B6 is another one, or magnesium with vitamin B6. Less evidence, but again, if you want to try it, definitely speak to your healthcare provider beforehand. Give it a go for 12 weeks, and if you don't find an improvement, then I would just stop.
Okay, amazing. Most women can't really sort of reorganize their whole month. You know, I think I've definitely got the luxury of being able to say, look, I'm not going to do certain things when I know I've got PMS. For a lot of women, they can't do that. So what do you think are some realistic ways that people can work with their cycle?
That's a really good question. And it's true, like we have to learn to like navigate life around our cycles. And I think it's making the most of the good days and like learning when we need to pull back on maybe the less good days. I think one thing to bear in mind is every cycle is very different. So not forward projecting and thinking I'm going to feel terrible this day, but just taking each day as it comes. And as we mentioned a little bit earlier, it might be that like exercise, for example, looks a little bit different in the different weeks. But how I would approach it, instead of saying, oh, during the luteal phase, I only do low intensity, approaching it with like, I keep my exercise routine relatively consistent across the month. But if I need to alter it because I feel low in energy today, or I've got cramps or I've got bloating, that's what you do. So you're being more like cycle aware than like very prescriptive about what you're doing. I think the biggest risk of us approaching the cycle in a really prescriptive way is that we end up having like two really productive, really strong weeks, and then 2 weeks where we do absolutely nothing and we just would make no progress. So I think it's just about learning to accept some of those changes and work with what you can. Like during that luteal phase, I know that like I don't accept as many like social invitations because I just want to get more sleep. I want to make sure that, because I know when I sleep more, I eat balanced meals, I'm not out late, I'm exercising, even if it's just morning walks. My symptoms don't feel as intense. But the weeks that I'm traveling and I'm eating meals at 11 p.m. at night and everything's all over the place, my symptoms are like ramped up 100% because I'm not looking after myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go into sort of hormones and relationships because, of course, it's really important for us to understand our cycles and how our hormones are impacting us day to day for our own well-being. But as part of our well-being, I think we also have to understand how it can impact the relationships that we're in. And specifically, I'm talking about romantic relationships. Yeah. How do you think, firstly, we can start to communicate what is happening to us with our partners, and how important do you think it is that we do?
I think, first of all, it's incredibly important that we do. And breaking it down for them, because I think if we're thinking about male partners here, most men just don't fully understand that there's more than just the period. They don't understand what else is happening. And explaining to them that those hormones aren't just influencing when we're fertile, but also things like our energy, our mood, our nutrient needs, our sleep, all of those things. And breaking it down in that way, give them my book, like really help them understand that it's more than just like the bleeding phase. I think even when I think about my own relationship, when I first started dating my now husband, he was so uncomfortable with the conversations around the menstrual cycle. And I'm like, this is what I do for a living, so you're going to have to get on board. And now I like hear him like speaking to like his sister, for example, or like he's a coach speaking to his like female clients. And he's like, you're in your luteal phase. So now that you might find that you're more hungry, your cravings are higher. And I'm like, he really understands what's happening. Or for me, he knows what I need. So I think it's being patient because they're also learning about this for the first time. But when we look at research, and this research was actually in women who have PMS, they did split the group into women who had single therapy and women who had couples therapy with their partner. And all these women had PMS. And they found that couples therapy was more effective at reducing PMS symptoms because they felt like the load was shared. There's also been really interesting research where they found that actually your relationship and your support system was a stronger predictor of how your mood was during the menstrual cycle versus your hormones. So this isn't to say that your hormones aren't impacting your mood, but if you are someone who gets really terrible moods before your period, if you can tell your partner that that's how you feel, and they know to just be a little bit more supportive. If that's taking the bins out, they cook dinner, those kind of things. It just helps buffer that stress for you, and it will help you with your symptoms. So I think it's a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's just quickly go. Can we give like a top tip of how a partner can support a woman during their cycle? And we'll go through it phase by phase.
Okay.
Okay, phase one.
So during their period, they're obviously bleeding. If they're having pain, offer to make them like either a hot water bottle or a warm bath. Like, it seems like an old wives' tale, but heat is actually really effective at reducing cramps. Also, the talc like matters. So do that. And then while they're in the bath, you can make them a nice anti-inflammatory dinner with like salmon, greens, some sweet potato.
Phase two.
So during this time is their follicular phase. So estrogen's rising. Maybe they're feeling a little bit stronger. So you could like suggest that you go for like a gym session together and have like a nice post-workout meal.
Phase three.
Ovulation. So if you're trying to conceive, this is the time to try. If she's feeling herself, you can maybe suggest like that's a good time for date night if you want to do something. And then phase four, luteal phase. Right now is like a really good time to just be a bit more supportive. Maybe you're doing a bit more of the kind of like housework at home, or you're suggesting that you're going to do like little things that will make her life easier. If that's like picking her up from the train station, you're cooking dinner, bringing her tea in bed, those kind of things.
Men, take note. What are the signs that a kind of struggle within a relationship is hormonal and not a personal thing?
That's a really good question. I think if we think about what I mentioned with PMS and PMDD, it has a really typical cyclical pattern, like cyclical being the main thing. So if you find like it's coming every month, the same time every month, roughly, and it's improving at the same time of the month, roughly, it's likely it's tied to your cycle, which is why it's so important to be tracking your symptoms, to be tracking your cycle as well. So you can say, okay, it's really weird because the week before my period, I seem to always pick fights with my partner, but nothing with him is changing. If you find like there is no pattern, rhyme or reason, and it's just them, then maybe that's something that you need to probe a little bit deeper. Yeah. And unfortunately, I'm not a therapist. So.
Okay, so I've got one last question sort of about this, really, is that, okay, I have someone in my life, and I won't say who, but she has got the Mirena coil, and she's had it for years, and so she doesn't bleed. But she's got an Aura ring like me. And on my Aura ring, I think one of the most fascinating things is as soon as my day 21 comes, my temperature spikes and it shows me that my temperature is like not about 0.3 above, and it will stay high until the day, first day of my cycle, when it will come back down. So we share stats, and so I can see that her temperature has also risen. And in that week, she will suddenly be really down, not herself, really self-conscious, really hard on herself. And even though she's got the coil, and I'll say to her, I think you've got PMS. And she's like, no, I don't. I've got the coil. I don't get it. And I'm like, can you still get PMS symptoms even if you're not actually bleeding and you've got the Mirena coil?
So it depends. There are lots of different types of hormonal contraception. And we have like estrogen, progesterone combined methods, and then we have progesterone only methods. And the Mirena coil is a progesterone only method, and it sits in the womb, so it mostly acts within the womb. But in some women, you still ovulate. So that sounds, the temperature increase often happens after, is a sign that you have ovulated. So it could be that she's still ovulating with the coil. It doesn't mean that it's not working. So yeah, it might be that she's still ovulating through that. So that would, so then she would still experience the symptoms of PMS.
Interesting. Okay, I have a theory that men have a cycle too, because they get moody 100%. And I think that women get this bad rep that we have this like emotional month and that like it's such a woman thing. But I'm sorry, men are fucking emotional and stressed and moody too. I would say more often than we are. Do they have a cycle?
They don't. Like, the only, they have like, you know, like a 24-hour clock that we have that as well. We just have like this overlaid cycle on top of that. I think they're like, you're completely right. There's this narrative that women are hysterical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there used to be this like made up condition called hysteria, which like doctors, male doctors made up like years and years ago about like how there's this illness that originates from a woman's womb and it makes her crazy and blah, blah, blah.
Really?
It's where the word
that.
Like hystericals come from. And so I feel like even though we're like past those ages, it still is like ever present. Like if a woman gets upset, she's like being overdramatic, all of those kind of connotations. Whereas if like a man gets upset or speaks up for himself, he's just confident or like he's just assertive. He just knows what he wants. So I think that is less about hormones and just more about like this, these gender stereotypes about we have about men and women.
But I heard that they have a daily testosterone rhythm, which is sort of like their equivalent of a monthly cycle.
Yeah. So we both have testosterone and we release our hormones. One of the reasons why I don't really like use the term hormone balance is like our hormones are never balanced. They're like always fluctuating. And so all of our hormones across the day are always fluctuating, essentially. Yeah, yeah. And so there might be a low hormone period that they're experiencing and potentially that could impact their moods, but yet to be proven.
How do you think stress, sleep and lifestyle can impact male hormones compared to women's?
So I think when it comes to like stress in particular has a really big impact on our sex hormones in both men and women. So we have really similar axes in that like there's an area in the brain that causes us to kind of signals to our ovaries to produce sex hormones. And the men have a similar thing with their brain to their testes. And that is like a constant feedback rhythm. It just works in the background all the time. But if we're really stressed over a long period of time and cortisol's high, that basically downregulates the hormones from the brain to stop producing those hormones. And so in men, you get low testosterone. In women, you get low estrogen. And so for us, our first warning sign is our periods go missing. Men don't have that. They don't have like a warning sign, but they'll probably find that they're really lethargic. They'll find their libido is really low. They might find they're really weak in the gym. Mm. Like it's a lot more like low level symptoms than what we get because we have this one monthly thing that tells us if something's right or wrong. Mm. We also get those symptoms. Like if you lost your cycle, you'd probably find you're really fatigued. You'd find that like your digestive issues are off. You'd find if you're going to the gym, you're unable to lift the weights you normally do. Basically, it impacts every organ system.
Wow. So could that be if I was, let's say I've said before my PMS was particularly bad this week. Could that be because I was more stressed and so my estrogen was lower and so the estrogen progesterone ratio was worse? And so that was kind of, even though maybe I was producing the same amount of progesterone, because I was had lower estrogen, then it made the symptoms more apparent.
In terms of like how it directly impacts your hormones or ratio, I'm not so sure, but we know that stress impacts PMS. So if you were like being, if you were incredibly stressed one month, you're traveling loads, your diet was a bit off, that's likely to impact your PMS. Maybe not in that month, but maybe in the following month. Mm. So it's like, it's the really difficult thing is like all of these things are hard to control sometimes.
But how come not in this month, in the following month?
So you're not going to impact your hormone levels in real time. But right. If you were consistently stressed, you might find that then your cycle, that's impacting your cycle in the next few cycles. Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about contraception. Over 100 million women use hormonal contraception. 2 years ago when I went to a hormone doctor, there was the top hormone doctor in the UK, one of, and I said I'd had really severe PMS and I wanted to lessen it. And he suggested putting me on the pill. And I went on the pill and within 9 days, I felt so depressed. Like I really couldn't believe. And I remember I was just thinking, and I wasn't putting two and two together at all. I was just like, God, I'm suddenly feeling so low. I haven't felt this low in so long. It's so strange. And then I sort of wrote about it on my Instagram and I was shocked by the amount of messages from women who said, oh my goodness, I've been on the pill. It had this effect on me, or I came off the pill and my whole mental health changed.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about the pill and what are some of the side effects that we don't know about?
Yeah, so your experience with the pill is quite common. And like I mentioned earlier, there are different types of pills, but I'm assuming that you were on a combined form, which is estrogen, progesterone. That's the one that we call like the pill, which is quite amazing. Of all the medications in the world, it's the only one that we call the pill.
Yeah, so true.
And when it comes to like the mental health side effects, the results are really mixed. Like there's some research which says it worsens mental health. There's some research which says it can help, and some research that says it's quite neutral. But it's one of the biggest reported reasons why women stop or switch hormonal contraception is because of the impact on their mood. So your experience is very real. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is, when you go into a consultation with a doctor, they have about 10 minutes to counsel you on what form you should go on and any side effects. So they'll list out the most significant or the highest risk factors. So things like whether that's any, depending on what pill or hormonal contraception you're on, it might be something like risk of clots, breast cancer, things like that. Not always do they list the things that are maybe the finer print, but if you were to like pull out the full leaflet, there would be lots of other things. And so that could be things like mood impact. It could be things like changes to libido, could be changes to skin and hair. So there are quite a few that aren't always cancelled on, but not everyone experiences it in the same way. So for some women, and this is why I try to be kind of balanced about my conversations around the pill. When I think about some women who have really debilitating periods, being on the pill is the only thing that helps them have a career, because it helps blunt the pain and it means that they can go about their day to day. For some women with PCOS who have really severe hormonal acne or hair loss, it helps resolve the acne and improves the hair growth. It doesn't fix the problem, but it can help there. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, for some women, they really don't get on with it and it's not the right solution for them. For some women, it is. I do think that we don't give women enough time. They're not fully informed on all the side effects and risks. Mm. And I think we need a lot more options for women when it comes to contraception and actual male options that are not just condoms.
Because do you think, I mean, most of my friends started the pill when they were 15, 16. Do you think that is too young to be going on something that you end up on for so many years?
I think it depends on why. I think for like a lot of women, a lot of girls, they will go on it because maybe bad skin, but is it just hormonal puberty acne? Do they really need to go on the pill right now? Are there alternatives? For some women or some girls, they do get really debilitating periods from puberty. And so maybe they need something to help them continue to stay in school. So I think it's a really personal conversation that someone needs to have with their doctor. I don't have children, so I don't know how that feels to be in that consulting room. But as someone who does a lot of consultations with women, one of the things I often hear is, well, I started the pill when I was 16 and I just stayed on it because no one asked me to come off it, or I didn't really think about coming off it. So it's something that we should be like, you know, questioning a little bit more, whether you need to stay on it and what are the alternatives as well.
If someone is considering coming off it, what are some of the things that they should consider about that process?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And to be honest, it's one of my most like frequently asked questions, because I think some women are afraid to come off because they're like, am I going to get a tsunami of hormones at me? And it will feel different because your hormones are essentially very level when you're on the pill. They're like a little bit higher, but they're very flat. Whereas like if you're not on any hormonal contraception, you have that lovely ebb and flow, which is a bit of a roller coaster. So if you're coming off it, I guess the first thing to consider is like, you can get pregnant straight away. So if that's something you want to avoid, you might want to think about, what are my alternatives? If that's not something that you're worried about, then that's fine. So because the hormones you take in a pill and you ingest them, they will actually leave your body quite quickly. So within like 7 days. So you should, in theory, kind of have that out of your system quite quickly. Now, we mentioned some of the benefits of being on the pill, which is like tends to be clear skin and like hair and things like that. So you might find that if you have any underlying imbalances like PCOS, you could develop acne. And for some women, that can be quite shocking because you could be on the pill from 16 to 30 and then you're in your 30s with acne. Mm-hmm. Not all women, but those things could happen. Again, the pill could be masking something underlying like PCOS where you have irregular cycles. So if your periods don't return within 3 months, we usually say it come back in a month, but I'd say it's reasonable to wait 3 months. I would speak to your doctor to like make sure that nothing else is going on, because when you're on the pill, you have a fake bleed. You're not actually having a period. It's just like a withdrawal thing. So you don't actually know the state of your body.
Right.
So it's kind of like a wait and see what happens situation. And with that in mind, if you are considering, maybe you're trying to conceive, you're thinking in the next 6 months, I want to try to conceive, I would definitely give yourself a good buffer, a good 3 to 6 month buffer before, like, to come off, figure out what's happening with your cycles, start tracking, because you want to figure out like what's really happening in my body.
And if somebody wants to come off, is there a particular day of the cycle? Should they always finish their cycle before they stop, or does it matter when?
No, I think it makes sense that like you would stop in that, like when you're having your break, but you can,
stop anytime. I want to now talk about perimenopause and menopause, because to be completely honest with you, I have no idea about it. And I'm so unknowledgeable, and I really want to learn and understand what's going on. So what is perimenopause and what is menopause?
Great question. So perimenopause is basically the transition from having cycles into the menopause. And that can take anywhere between like a few months up to 10 years. And unlike the menopause, which is a point in time, which is 12 months since your last period, so it's essentially just a moment in time, that's very obvious when it happens, because you've not had a period for 12 months. Whereas the perimenopause isn't very, it's not always obvious you're going through it. The most common symptoms will be things like your periods start to become more and more spaced out. They become more regular, or they might get a little bit lighter. They might get a little bit heavier. They basically change. Mm-hmm. Other symptoms are you might start experiencing things like hot flashes, which you do experience in the menopause as well. You could experience other things like fatigue, vaginal dryness. You might find your skin's a little bit more dry. You might find your hair texture starts to change. So there's really like a whole host of things that could happen, which is why women find it really confusing, because there's no like, we tend to not test your bloods during that time unless we think you're going through like an early menopause, because they're fluctuating really erratically. So it doesn't really give us a good clear picture. So it would be diagnosed based on symptoms, and then after you've had like 12 months of no periods, then we say you've gone through the menopause, you're now postmenopausal.
Because I hear a lot of people saying, oh, I think I'm having perimenopause, but you're saying that they really won't test like very often until they see what is it, they see all the symptoms, or they have to see them for a certain amount of time?
So anyway, here in the UK, anyway, we don't test for the perimenopause because the hormones are fluctuating. So it's like, it's not a clear picture. So it would be based on like your symptoms. But you can have treatment if you are having really severe symptoms in the perimenopause. So it's based on like age and what you're experiencing. So it would be based on the consultation that you have with the doctor, as opposed to like one test would tell us what's happening. Whereas when you go through the menopause, if you showed up and you said, well, it's been 12 months or 2 years since my period, they'd say, well, you're in the menopause now. And if we checked your hormones, your estrogen would be very low then. Whereas when you're going through the perimenopause, it doesn't just like gradually go down like a slope. It's as if like a child scribbled, that's how it's going down. So that's why you can feel a little bit crazy.
That must be really difficult for women, because, I mean, it sounds quite challenging, you know, and also to not be able to like test it. And sometimes I think with anything in life, we want certainty. We want to know like, this is what I'm going through, and be able to know it so that we can then work through it.
Yeah, that's it. And I think there's a lot more awareness about the menopause now. Like, I feel like Davina McCall's like really been flying the flag, and I love that. But I think maybe there's like less support for the perimenopause, because it's like that transition between having periods to not having them. And maybe, you know, like you're in your 40s, so you're still like maybe working, still in your career. So like everything is like quite busy, probably at the top of your career. So if you're experiencing these symptoms on top of everything, like that is a lot to deal with.
Mm. How can someone or can someone prepare for it?
You can. Like, I think the thing is, the most important change is we are losing estrogen in that like transition and when we go through the menopause. And as we mentioned earlier, estrogen's like so important for loads of things. So important for like collagen production, important for bone strength. So estrogen helps keep our bones strong, muscle building, brain health. So if we're losing that estrogen, we need to think about ways we can kind of future-proof ourselves. So bone health's one of the biggest things, which is why women get osteoporosis more commonly than men, especially after the menopause. But if you can strength train, which helps kind of pull on your bones and make them nice and strong, and do weight-bearing exercises, will keep them nice and strong. Also, because we're losing that like stimulus for our muscle, if we can weight train, that's really important. When it comes to like collagen, making sure that we're like getting enough protein in our diet, make sure that we're like getting our omega-3s if our skin's drying out. Sleep is often something that can get really disrupted during that time. And also we see increased rates of depression after the menopause as well. So it's like all of these changes impact every area of our lives. So we need to think about going back to those four pillars. Like, am I optimizing my nutrition to support myself through this phase? Am I exercising regularly? Do I have good support systems? And am I doing stuff for my stress management? And am I doubling down on sleep behavior? The other thing that like often happens during this transition, especially for women who've gone through the menopause, is oftentimes they have like older parents and they've got kids. And so they're dealing maybe with caring for their older parents and their kids are moving out of the house and maybe they're coming up to retirement. Maybe they've divorced. There's lots of other things happening in our lives. So it's like it's even more important now to think about how we can look after ourselves to get through that period as well.
I mean, I really feel for us women.
I know.
Like, it is, like, we really go through it, honestly. I think we're so strong and resilient to be able to handle all these changes that are happening to us constantly. It sounds like the menopause is awful. Is there any hope?
I mean, some people sail through the menopause and they actually don't really know that it's happening.
Right.
And usually if that was your mum, then chances are you might be similar, but that's not always the case. So I think it's not doom and gloom for everyone. It really depends, and there are things that you can do to make it like similar to the menstrual cycle when we talked about like having terrible luteal phase. There are things you can do to like support yourself, be that like making sure you're looking after your sleep, stress, nutrition. There is hormone replacement therapy, which isn't for everyone. There are risks to it, and there are different types of formulations. It's very individual, but for some women, it's life-changing. And then, you know, we're going to live a third of our lives in the menopause. So it's really important that, like, we also change the narrative around it. It's not like your life is ending. It's your reproductive life is ending. For some women, that gives them a whole new lease of life.
So when you get the menopause, just out of interest, do you get more symptoms in the beginning and then eventually your body adapts and then it kind of gets better? Or is it like if you have bad symptoms at the beginning, do they stay bad?
It depends, but it's more typical to be the former of what you said, where it can be quite turbulent in the beginning because they're still a bit erratic and then they settle as well. And I guess you settle into this new way of life and these new changes.
What do you think are some of the benefits of reaching menopause?
I think now we've got a lot more support for women during that time. So I used to really fear that stage of my life, whereas now I'm thinking, actually, it's not going to be all that bad.
I love that. If you could give one lifestyle recommendation to kind of support your hormone health, what would it be?
That is a really good question. I think something that everyone can do is not sleeping less than 6 hours regularly, because that's one of the biggest things that can disrupt your hormones, not just your sex hormones, but lots of hormones in your body. And as someone who like used to work in the NHS and like was a medical student for a very long time, I feel like I thought I could just get away with 5 hours of sleep, whereas now I know what I know. I would just not do that. And I know that can be hard to hear if you are someone who is like a new mum. If it's temporary, it's fine. But if you can control it, like try and make up your sleep where possible.
And what do you think is one behaviour that women underestimate that can actually make a huge difference to us feeling better within our cycle? And
I think exercise, like there's really good research for like the sport of exercise and PMS symptoms, for the sport in dysmenorrhea, which is painful periods, for regulating our mood. And also compared to men, we tend to be less active. So we need to move more, and we need to also like do resistance training, like lift weights and strengthen our bodies.
Oh God, I've really got to start resistance training. Like I've just got to.
You've got to. That will be one of the like most impactful things for when you go through the perimenopause if you start now.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I've got to do it. And actually, like with that bad PMS, I wasn't exercising because I've been traveling, and it is one of the first things that goes for me is I just don't exercise often enough.
That's it. And this time of the year, it's quite common for people to just be like, well, it's cold outside. Like, I don't really want to go to the gym today.
No, I've joined the gym opposite my house. I actually have zero excuse. I literally have to cross the road. I'm going tonight. Okay, Hazel, thank you so, so much. I just have a quick fire round for you before you go. What is one food you always have in your kitchen?
That is a really good question. I would say eggs. I feel like they're so versatile, really great for us. I probably have them most days.
Yes, I love it. Love a good egg. Anyway, favorite workout when energy is low?
Just walking. I'm just like a walk first thing in the morning is a non-negotiable for me.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, every morning.
How like, long?
Even if it's just, so the loop I do is like 35 minutes, but if I don't have that full time, I'll do like half of the loop.
Your best natural PMS hack?
I feel like a broken record, but I'd say exercise. Like, you won't believe me, but it's so important for the physical and the mental side effects. So even if it's just walking or doing yoga, yoga has a lot of research behind it in PMS. Mm-hmm. It's going to help your symptoms. You're going to feel better for it.
Yes. Your go-to breakfast for the luteal phase?
Again, thinking about our balanced breakfast, our carbs, our fats and our protein. So I would go something like a seeded sourdough, smashed avo and an egg, and we'll get some like spinach on the side.
One piece of advice for women entering the perimenopause?
Start strength training, please. If you're not doing it already.
Your best self-care ritual for mental well-being?
I'm going to say something that's like we haven't spoken about, and that is social connection, which is like one of the biggest predictors of mental well-being, like in all people. So if you're able, it's not about like having a ton of friends, but having people that you're able to confide in. So if you are struggling in that luteal phase and you can just pick up the phone and say like, can we just sit next to each other and like watch a movie? Like, can we just be around each other? That's really important.
And lastly, what does rising mean to you?
I think growing into your potential.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Amazing. Dr. Hazel, thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest on Rides with Roxy.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode. Hormones are such a big part of our lives, you know, and I think that understanding our hormones better, understanding our cycles is just so empowering because it gives us information that we can use to really feel our best. And I also think it's so important. I love what she said about communicating it with our partners so they can help understand us and support us better as well. And not just our partners, any men in our life, you know, maybe our... Well, maybe might not want to talk to your boss about it just yet, but maybe one day we'll get to the point or we can be so open about it. I loved that. If you loved it and it helped you in some way, please do rate, leave a comment, send us a DM, let us know. It all does really help. Don't forget, I'm going to be answering one of your questions on the solo episode on Thursday, and then we'll be back for another incredible interview on Monday. Thank you so much for being part of the Rise journey, and I'll see you next time.